So without further ado, let's welcome Roberta Taylor.
Don't worry. So what I'm talking about is solo piano. It's funny, I said I'm doing a talk on solo piano. He said, with or without the rhythm section, right? And I thought, oh, that's funny, that's a great joke, but I think let's just dive right in. Solo piano is really different from playing with a rhythm section. Obviously, we all kind of. How many of you are pianists or aspiring pianists? Great. How many of you have like much more experience or higher comfort level, say, playing with a rhythm section, playing trio than playing solo? Some of you feel equally comfortable or equally uncomfortable.
Equally uncomfortable,
I hear you. Well, it's really like anything. It's the more you do it, the better it gets. I've actually, I've always played solo piano a little here and there, but over the last several years, I've been doing it more. I was on NPR's Piano Jazz, Mary Parton's Piano Jazz, for the third time a couple of years ago, and that show requires you to play a lot of solo piano. It's really all, you play with the first two times I did it, Marion was the host. The last time I did it, great pianist and John Weber was the host. And of course, you play a lot of duo with the host, but you also have to play a lot of solo. And I just felt really dissatisfied with my solo playing. I said, this is something I really want to work on. I've had trios for many years, and I've become very comfortable playing trio, but solo is really a different animal, and I just wanted to get more comfortable inside myself. So I've been really focusing on that for the last few years. I did a solo piano record. I'm planning to do another one. And it really is a different thing. Some of it is just about just doing it. I can tell you all kinds of things and to try and to work on, but you really have to just sit down and make yourself do it. Which is really true of everything that we do in music. If you're playing and the pilot says, well, I read all the books about how to fly the plane, you're not going to feel that comfortable. He says, I've flown the plane a million times, and you're going to feel more comfortable. So whatever I tell you, it's not just enough to just take notes or remember what I said. It's really important to actually apply it and work on stuff. That's the only way you're really going to get comfortable with it. So one of the first things people always ask about is solo piano. What do you do with your left hand? Because we all learn these voicings, right? When we're learning to play the rhythm section, we learn all these hip voicings, these kind of voicings. What do we do? And one thing that a lot of pianists will do when they first start playing solo is they'll try to walk a bass line. Like they'll do something like this, Now, that's only going to get you so far. It's funny because I remember many years ago, I took a piano lesson with George Cables, and I started doing that, and he said, the problem with that is that once you stop doing that, then everyone's going to notice, oh, there's no bass, no bass player. No one was thinking about the fact that there was no bass player until you started doing this. Now, as soon as you stop, everyone's like, wait a minute, there's no bass player. I don't like that. And the other problem that I have with walking a bass line is that it works really great if you're playing on a bass because you have this difference in sonority. If you have the bass that obviously has a very different sonority from the piano. But when you're doing it on the same instrument that you're playing lines on, the sonorities kind of get in the way of each other. There's a lack of clarity that I find it just doesn't work that well. So third reason I don't really like to do that is that it's kind of distracting. It's like your mind, we really can't multitask, right? We think we can, but we really can't. So you're trying to create these ideas in your left hand and in your right hand, and the quality of your ideas is going to go down exponentially, the more hands you have. So what I like to do is create kind of an illusion that there's more than one thing happening at a time, even if there's really only one thing happening at a time. And I think of it as sort of a call and response thing between your two hands. So, one hand kind of plays something and then the other hand answers, and you get into this thing where it sounds like there's more than one hand playing. So for example, my last CD, I did this beautiful tune called Estate by Bruno Martino. And it's a bossa nova, and I played it in 7 just to spice things up a little bit. We'll talk about that later. And for the soloing, it's you can keep this sort of thing going, but it gets a little monotonous and it kind of gets in the way. So what I did is I thought about it more in terms of like the call and response thing. Um, about what you want to play. So you're doing something with your left hand. You don't always, you don't feel like you always have to have both things going at the same time. One thing and the other. So that's one thought. The other thing about, like, if you're playing with this in this way, playing solo piano really requires you to feel the time really deeply. You can't rely on the rhythm section. Now, when you're playing with a trio, you shouldn't be relying on the rhythm section anyway. You should be feeling the time deeply, right? It shouldn't be about the rhythm section. But when you're playing solo, it's going to be really obvious if you don't have your time together. And I found that as I've been working on my solo playing over the last few years, my trio playing has improved. Because as independent as I thought I was, I'm even more independent now. Now, independent doesn't mean that you're ignoring the rhythm section, but it just means that you feel the time strongly in yourself. You're not depending on them. And it makes you, making you a stronger player makes the whole trio sound better. I'm using the terms trio and rhythm section interchangeably now. Obviously, they mean different things, but I'm using them interchangeably today. Okay, so how do you do that? Well, there's some tricks that you can use. I like using a metronome, but you have to be careful not to use the metronome as a crutch. A lot of you probably learn to put the metronome on 2 and 4, and that's great when you're first learning to play. But as you get a little more advanced and that gets a little too easy, you may find that you want to find some more challenging ways of using a metronome. I remember years ago when I was a student at New England Conservatory, I'm not going to say how many years, but it was many years ago, great trumpet player John McNeil gave me this exercise to do. And basically what it involves is just like having a click of the metronome like every 4 bars or every 8 bars and playing along with that. Now back then we didn't have really fancy electronic, I think it was just the beginning of electronic metronomes where you could set the beat to be on every bar or something, or every 4 bars or every 8 bars. Now it's really easy. You can buy an app for your iPhone that will let you just, click on the beat every 4 bars or every 8 bars. What you can do is that way, you're kind of testing yourself. The metronome doesn't lie. And if you hear that metronome, and 8 bars go by or 4 bars go by, and you hear that click and you're a little off with that click, with that downbeat, then you know something wasn't quite right. So it's a great exercise. You can bring a metronome, well, I have my iPhone, but I think you get the idea. So this is going to really help, this kind of exercise is going to really help you to get your time really, really solid, because you're going to start to feel, I'm rushing, or I'm dragging, okay? It doesn't just carry you along the way putting the metronome in 2 and 4 does. So, when you have that time, when you get that time feel inside you, the great thing about that is that then when you play, you don't feel like you have to lay out every beat. You don't have to play every beat, you don't have to express every beat. Because you got it inside you. And that allows the music to be more relaxed and to swing more. So for example, one of my favorite tunes to play is Sam Rivers' Beatrice. You guys familiar with that tune?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful tune. That's a tune like, you could walk a bass line on that, but for the reasons I've already discussed, we're not to do that. But if you really have that feel and you think you don't need a rhythm section, you don't need a bass line, you don't need anything but just that feeling in you that's going to come out when you play that tune. So I might play very minimalistically on that, but hopefully it's still going to swing, right? I don't have to force it to swing. I don't have to walk. I don't have to do all kinds of things.
Thank you.
of doing a walking bass line like this, you know. Musical and swings more, and I get to kind of focus on like what am I actually playing rather than trying to do two things at once, which is like really impossible. You know, when I first started playing solo piano, I found it like very intimidating because I felt like, wow, I have to be a whole band, I have to do everything, you know. And then I realized that I don't have to be the whole band at all. And once I like got free of that concept that I have to be the bass player, I have to be the drummer, I have to be the pianist, I have to be the horn player, that was very freeing. But it's like we feel like we have to do all these things because if we're not laying it all down, you feel like we're going to somehow lose it. But it's really not necessary. If you really have it strong embedded in you, feel on the time, you can play five notes and it's gonna be happening. You know, you just go, you know. When to do this, you know, I'm just like sitting here going, you know, chord, bass, chord, melody. It's easier said than done, of course. I think to some degree I'm going to give a little bit of a cop-out answer because some of it has to do with experience. It's just the more you do it, recording yourself is a great tool. I use the voice memo app on my iPhone. I don't work for Apple, so I keep mentioning my iPhone. But, you know, like a voice memo app is a really easy way to record yourself. Sometimes I'll just record literally like a minute or 2 minutes of myself playing and listen back to it. I guess you could call it micro practicing. I think I just invented that. That's cool. I like that term. You know, where you really just focus in. Like for me, it's interesting because I've been playing piano for a really long time, and the older I get and the more I play, the more I'm trying to go back to basics. Like it's great as pianists. A lot of us, we have all this like hip stuff we can play, you know. But for me, it's really, as I get older, as I said, going back to the basics, time and articulation and phrasing and you know, locking in your eighth notes. So I could record myself on a gig and say like, oh, I played some hip shit here. But but really what it's about, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
If I just record myself playing for like 50 seconds, and then listen back and say, am I locked in? Why wasn't that locked in? Why didn't that line lock in? Am I having trouble technically with that? Or was I not concentrating? A lot of, you know, as for me, it's a mental thing as well. For all of us, it's a mental thing, right? It's focusing. So listening to yourself play for 15 seconds and then listening back and saying, how could I do that? How could I execute that better? Because it's going to make everything you play better. Now, as far as going back to your question, how do you know when to play chord? How do you know when to play melody? Here's an idea for an exercise, because I think some of it is just about the discipline of like not overplaying, and you can force yourself to have that discipline by just setting up kind of a rule for yourself as a practice exercise, where say for example you play, say B flat, you practice two bars of lines, two bars of not lines, so something like this.
Thank you.
that's a good practice thing. Obviously, it becomes a little unmusical at a certain point because you're just falling into this pattern, but it's a good way to get yourself out of the habit of feeling like you always have to be playing with your right hand or that you always have to be doing something with your left hand. And then hopefully, eventually, when you know when you're on the bandstand, then hopefully you just kind of let it go, and hopefully it'll just come out. You just feel more natural with it, you know.
Some more modern stuff, some of my former teachers, Shibaira, Stanley Cowell, some modern stuff. So you can feel free to take one of these. As far as where I got that concept, I'm sure I didn't invent it. It's just kind of in the air, you know. Did anyone else have a question?
Okay. I got a question, another question.
Okay, great.
What are some essential practice things that you practice on a regular basis? Or should I say that you do as an artist on a regular basis to maintain your artistry?
Okay, that's a really broad question. It's not necessarily about solo piano, which is fine.
Just being a pianist, what are some things that you say to yourself, okay, these are some things that I like to regularly do in order to communicate?
I think you unintentionally hit the nail on the head, because doing things regularly is really what it's about. Whatever it is you're doing, it's about consistency. So when you're young, you obviously have more time to practice things than when you get older, so take advantage of it if you're young. But consistency is really important. You know, you can't just not practice all week and then say, well, you know, today I didn't practice all week, but today I'm going to practice 15 hours to make up for it. You know, you're better off just practicing a little every day. So whatever it is you're doing it regularly is really important. Not just for your physical technique, which that's one reason, for the technique. It's just like going to the gym. You know, if you just go to the gym like once a month, you're not gonna see any results, you know, like that. But there's also a memory muscle. So there's the technical aspect, and there's also mental aspect. I find if I don't practice regularly, when I do go to play, it's harder for me to get my mind into that space where I can really focus on the piano, really focus on the music, and let everything go. So it's very important. That consistency is very important, both technically, you know, physically, and mentally. It's the most important thing. as far as what I do, like I said before, lately I've been doing this micro practicing where I'll just work on a very basic thing. Like I'll just play a line and then listen back to it, saying, how am I doing? You know, did that line lock in? Did it feel good? Did I like my articulation? Just things like that, very basic things. I practice, sometimes I have to remind myself not to play too much. I happen to be like a very edgy personality, and I find I really have to remember to relax. And so I have to remind myself and actually practice leaving space. I have to remind myself not to care like who's in the audience when I'm playing, that kind of thing. And I'll practice my concentration. Like I would sit down and say, like, I'm just gonna really practice sitting and being as focused as I can and not getting distracted. I know it sounds like kind of weird, but it's like really practicing your concentration is so important, because it is a muscle that you can build up, you know? So you have to say to yourself, like, okay, you know, like whatever, you play a tune, maybe play a tune for 7 minutes or whatever, and then you stop, and you have to be really ruthless with yourself and say, you know, was I really completely in there, or did my mind drift off to like, oh, I wonder if the mail came yet today, you know? Like, was I really in there, you know? That's really important. So those are some of the things that I've been working on. But I think the consistency of doing it regularly is so important. Can't emphasize that enough. I saw a couple of other hands up.
Thank you. You mentioned a word that I was zeroing in on earlier, and that was audience.
Okay.
Could you elaborate on the audiences and the venues or the scenarios that you are placing yourself in that regard?
That's a good question, because I know that comes up sometimes. I used to study with Richie Bayrak, great pianist, great teacher. His concept is very advanced, his harmonic concept is very advanced. And he told me a story once, I don't even remember why he told me this, what the context was, we were just chatting, I guess. And he told me that a student had come in, and this student played a lot of restaurant gigs at the time. And Richie was showing him some more advanced harmonic stuff, and the student said, if I do that on my gigs, I'm going to get fired. You know, I can't do that. So, and Richie, of course, was like, well, fuck that, you know. But you have to decide, and I'm not going to make a judgment on anybody, you know. If somebody can make a living playing restaurants, and they're completely happy doing that, and they're happy never playing a major seventh chord with an augmented fifth in it, that's fine. If that makes you happy, more power to you, you know. But if you're going to be miserable or bored doing that, then, sorry, I don't even remember what the original question was. You were asking about the context of where you're playing, like in a restaurant or, yeah, of course. I used to do a lot of gigs like playing cocktail hours for weddings and things like that. And I would find that I would play more inside just because of the environment that I was in. It wasn't like I was consciously thinking, I have to play inside because this is a wedding and the bride's gonna come over and get pissed at me. It was just the environment that I was in. That's how my body and my mind responded to that environment. Did you have something?
Well, I'm gonna tag it. So
okay.
I often find myself teaching my students now, from my experience, that the piano player, if you're playing in a combo, or if you're playing alone or in a big band, you almost have to imagine, and I used a very odd analogy, but it's almost like you're a monkey in the jungle swinging from tree to tree. What are you grabbing onto next?
Mm.
Are you staying out of the way, or are you going to jump over to this? So are you kind of rhythmically chatting with the drummer, or are you like melodically interacting with what the sax player
may be playing? Well, it's funny you say that, because I was involved in this Google Hang a few weeks ago that Brett Premack put on, and Hal Galper was sort of doing a master class, and that was one of the things that came up, and he was talking about how you really have to be involved with the rhythm section, and I said to him, do you think of it as you're focused on this player, or is it all really just one, and it's just a big picture? And he responded, which is what I was thinking, is that it's really all one thing, and you really have to be listening to everything all at once. And the more, again, it comes down to experience. It's not something you can do overnight, but it's something to be aware of. And when you're playing, you really have to be listening to everyone at once. And the interaction will come naturally if you're doing that. So you got a question?
Yes, back to solo piano.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself playing a kind of, I don't want to use the word default, but do you have a methodology for voicing when you're solo as opposed to when you're playing with the rhythm section? How does that change? How do you?
Are you talking more in terms of playing ahead or just soloing or?
Either, but for example, playing ahead, how do you find yourself voicing? I mean, a lot of people with really big hands will, you know, cover like almost tenths and stuff like that.
I don't think I have a default, but I think there are several things you can do. I guess I have what I would call a quote bag of tricks. So for example, one of the things I was talking about before, the call and response is one thing. I do kind of like to occasionally like fall into a little bit of a stride thing. So I might be playing like there's, let's see, there's this Monk tune. I might be going along like playing a tune like Monk's Dream. Talked about like doing different things with your left hand. Let's talk about some other ways we can do that. One is you have to remember the piano is a big instrument. Especially when we're playing with a rhythm section, we tend to stay in here. We don't want to go down here because we get the bass player mad at you. I guess you could go up here, but sometimes this doesn't sound that good in terms of the sound matching up with the rest of the band. But when you're playing solo, you've really got this whole thing at your disposal, and you need to make use of it, especially like if you're doing a whole concert of solo or a whole CD of solo. Because if you stay here, the listener's ear is going to get, and your ear as a player, are going to get tired really fast. So just to give you an example, I'm working on this beautiful tune by Arthur Schwartz called Haunted Heart. Are you familiar with that tune? Great tune. I've been working on a remodernization of it, and I try to, you know, just kind of expand what I'm doing here in terms of the range of the piano. Play a ballad, for example, and they'll play, and then I'll say, were you playing rubato or out of time, or were you playing in time? And they'll say, I'm not sure. And my point is that clarity is really important, and knowing what you're trying to accomplish, it's really important. So if you're gonna play rubato, and really think about the phrasing. And if you're playing in time, then think about the time. So, just to give you an example, and you can do both in the same tune. It's another tune from a solo record. It's a tune by great Mary McPartland, who we lost a few months ago. Wonderful human being, wonderful person, wonderful pianist. It's a tune of hers that I recorded called In the Days of Our Love. And I start out really rubato, and you'll hear very clearly when I go into the time. I won't do the whole time thing, but I'll do the whole rubato thing and then go into the time so you can hear how clear the contrast is, because I think that's very important, clarity.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I don't have very big hands, so, but like basically,
I just kind of practice this like tense thing, like, and if you can't make the tent, like if you, you know, your hands can't get there, you know, I'm not, like Billy Taylor, he had insanely big hands, right? Didn't he? Is that Billy Taylor? Yeah, he could do like, you know, play like, you know, a fifth plus an octave, you know. But you can kind of fake it like with a pedal and with, you know, this kind of rolling thing. And the way to practice is just pick a tune and just do it. It doesn't even have to be a tune that you would want to play stride. It's just more about an exercise, you know? So it could be anything. So the blues, you know, C blues. Just practice, and then it'll become more natural. Does that make sense? I just want to mention, I do have some CDs for sale. You know, we're not supposed to sell them here, so I'll go out in the hallway. If anyone wants to buy someone, I can actually buy something. And I also, several years ago, I did this series of books. So I'm actually giving these away. All you have to do is give me your email address, and I will give you a book. Choose which one you want. That's basically it. Thanks so much. You've been a good one.